Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
There have been a nauseating number of articles, books, videos, trainings on leadership. And so I faced a challenge in doing a segment on it today. It's been years since I've done one. And so my challenge was, okay, what's not obvious about what it takes to be a modern leader? And that's been my challenge. And to assist in that, my off-frequent co-conspirator on the show, who certainly is a leader herself, I know she hates when I brag so much. Not only she's the Napa County Superintendent of Schools for, I think, the longest tenure in the history of Napa County, 21 years now, and not only is she was named recently one of the 40 top technology superintendents of the year, she, instead of just talking a game, she just won an award yesterday called Making It Happen for actually implementing leaderly ideas, not just talking about them. She's on the state superintendent's kitchen cabinet, state superintendent of education, and she was just asked yesterday to run for state superintendent of school, which she's turning down. But she's a leader, no question. Barbara Nemko, welcome to the show as usual.
Thank you. Sigh. Thanks for respecting my wish that you not brag about me.
Well, you know, not all requests are to be granted. I'm not your typical Jewish husband who simply doesn't have a speaking part. So, in any case,
you might try it. You might like it.
No, not even, you know, a radio talk show host who's got to put duct tape over his mouth in front of his wife. I don't think so. Anyway, okay. You want to go first? You want me to go first in terms of not obvious modern tips on how to be an awesome modern leader?
Well, let me start with one not obvious tip. There are apps for that, which shouldn't surprise us. In this day, there are apps for
apps for leadership?
And I just got introduced to one that I was not familiar with called Voxer, V as in Victor, O-X-E-R.
Okay.
And it's an interesting app because you can be part of a leadership group and you can post a question, which you can do on any app, but you can post it either by talking or by writing it. And so if you talk it, then it gets saved. So anybody can join the conversation, and you're in this group of people who you have selected to be part of your group who can help you with the answer. And everybody can see everybody else's responses if they allow that. And everyone can share. So it's a great way to connect with other people who may have been in a similar situation to the one that you are currently challenged by.
So you can form your own group. Make a specific example. What's a problem in the real world that a leader might face? And how would they form a group? What would they do? Make it real vivid with a concrete example.
Well, I can't give you a real world problem in business. I can give you a real world problem in my world.
Good, good, good.
Which is that right now, we're wrestling in Napa with the dilemma of, do you change the mascot for Napa High, which has always been the Napa Indians, because some people say it may be offensive to Indians, or do you say, no, the Indian was always revered as a symbol in Napa, and they were the Napa Indians, so would you change the word Napa too? And that's creating a big controversy in the community. So that's the kind of thing that the superintendent or the principal of the school might want to connect with a lot of friends who have similar positions who may have been through this and see how they did it, what they did.
Right, and so you can convene. It's not like a Google Hangout. It's not a live video chat. It can be, you can record an audio or a video or write text, and it's there like an old-fashioned forum, one of those online forums, except that it's easily populatable by verbal and visuals as well as text.
And that's unusual. I mean, obviously there are places you could text one person or five people, but this allows people at any time, and maybe you didn't think of somebody that you know who might have something to contribute, but people, you can see all the people who are part of Voxer who you know, so it picks up your contacts, and then you know who you can talk to.
But unlike a forum, it's more like Snapchat in that you can instantly disappear. You know, once there's a forum, the thread stays on forever. Whereas with this, you've got this question about, you know, the Napa Indian, and you can have this discussion, this multimedia essentially discussion, text, audio, and visual. And then when it's over, it's gone. So, you know, like Snapchat or Instagram.
Right.
Sounds terrific. Okay, I guess I'll take my shot at one not obvious key to modern leadership. In the old days, leadership was defined by charisma. You had to be bold and exciting and, you know, bombastic almost. Some of the great leaders are actually not super charismatic. I think of A.J. Lafley, the head of Procter & Gamble. But there is in an ever more complicated world, rather than charisma power, expert power is really important. So don't think because you're introvert. I think about Susan Collins, the senator from Maine. She's got a speech impediment, and she kind of talks like this, but she's a highly respected senator because she's expert. And that's true whether it be in the nonprofit sector. If you are really great at leading a strategic planning movement, if you are visionary, you can be quiet about it. You can be facilitative. Again, very modern aspect of leadership is not being not hierarchical. And so you can be collaborative and get a lot of input. But if you are really wise at asking quiet but really good questions, running a meeting crisply, expert power can be more important than charisma in the modern leadership, in the modern leader. Your reactions?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. Everybody is not going to be a John Kennedy kind of communicator.
Right.
And that doesn't mean you can't be a leader.
Okay.
I have one.
Great. Please, go ahead.
Just because you can't do something yourself doesn't mean that you can't inspire other people to be able to do it. And in fact, it sometimes works in your favor, because if it's something that involves learning something new, you can relate to people who are struggling with it and encourage.
Let me guess. You're talking about technology as an example for yourself.
Yes, you.
Yes, here is this, Barbara. You've won now 4 national awards for educational technology, and I will out you on the radio. You are no techno genius.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
One of the ways that I always talk to people about it is to say, when you look at me, how many of you had as your first thought, there's a technology digital native?
Hardly, right.
And then they laugh, and I say, well, that's not nice. But it's so clear I'm not a digital native. And so I struggle more than somebody who's 20 years younger who has grown up with it. But for the people who are older, for whom going digital is a challenge, and in this world, if you're not competent with digital, it makes life harder, I can relate and understand and figure out what it takes to help people learn how. And one of them is personal coaching in their own situation, in their classroom, because I can go to a conference and sit in on a session on technology. Half the time they go so fast that I'm lost anyway, and even if I follow it and it all works, when I go back to my situation, my desk, my classroom, somehow something goes wrong. It's so easy for something to go wrong using technology. So if you have someone who can come into your situation and work with you and show you exactly what to do, and then you got to remember to write it down because it looks so simple when they tell you. Write down all the steps, then you have it forever.
So the takeaway for leadership is if you don't have a given skill, especially technology, which ends up being so important, you probably need to have a one-on-one mentor. Going to taking classes or courses usually is a bad idea because the people who tend to teach those classes are naturals. and they're able to do it really, really well. Like I'm the world's worst piano teacher because I'm a natural pianist. It comes organically to me. Most people, especially if later in life they're trying to learn something like technology, being taught by a digital native, whether they're young or old, or just somebody who's a natural, is likely to not work. So your best tutor would be somebody who struggled him or herself to gain sufficient competency to be a leader. Is that what you're saying?
Almost. Sometimes you can be taught by somebody who's young and a digital native, but you need them one-to-one with you, focusing on watching what you're doing and being able to point out, this is where you went wrong.
Okay. I'm going to suggest another one, and then we have so much content. Let me give a little more, another tip or two, and you can give one, and then we'll go to the phones. We don't like to say this, but it's really true. There is a phrase that I like to use called respect but suspect. In reality, when you're a leader or even just a manager, too often there's one or more employees who want to sabotage you, either because they want your job or simply because they don't like you for one reason or another. Personal jealousy, they've got psychological problems, they have issues with authority, etc. It is very important that even in this kumbaya collaborative style leadership era that we're supposed to be in, that realize that sometimes individuals want to do what they want, what they'll do to get what they want. And so respect, yes, treat everybody with respect, don't immediately jump to conclusions, but keep your antenna out. And that, to that end, you want to try to surround yourself with people who are likely to be loyal to you and will tell you what's really going on with the troops, and yet are not these idiot yes men or yes women, but somebody who is going to be as smart and secure enough to disagree with you. So, part of that whole, the old rule, and this is not new, is, you want to hire the best people if possible, and people who will disagree with you is true. But you also really do are wise to keep in mind that you need people who are loyal to you. And, it's not tattling for somebody who's spreading rumors or trying to sabotage you. You're trying to do what's best for your nonprofit or your company or your work group or whatever. So respect but suspect. What do you think?
Oh, I completely agree. Particularly in the beginning of your new leadership role, because it's very likely that there are half the people who think, well, why did she get the job? I'm as good as she is. I'm as smart as she is. I've been here longer than she is. Whatever. So there may be some initial jealousy, which could work to sabotage you. And particularly when you start, it doesn't matter if you're the smartest person in the place. It doesn't matter if you're the smartest person in the world. If you come in and you immediately, unless you're brought in because there's a crisis and you immediately need to change things, but even then, you've got to start by listening to the people who are there who can tell you what brought on the crisis. And if there isn't a crisis, but you're just brought on as somebody retires and you're the next person chosen, you don't walk in like a bull in a china shop and start telling people how to change.
And people do that, leaders do that, because they want to show that they want to prove that it was right for them to be hired, that they're really great. And that's a mistake. It really does. And this is not new, but whether you're a frontline foreman in a factory or you are a CEO of a nonprofit or a company or head of a government agency, it really is true that you're really wise to, as they used to say, hold your powder, that is your gunpowder. Don't shoot so quickly. Really, you've got to talk to everybody. Have your iPad or your notebook with you and take notes as people. When you go and you talk to all stakeholders from top to bottom, it's worth taking the time to do that. And taking notes on your iPad or whatever makes them feel like you're taking them seriously. And then, after you've had a chance to listen to everything that's going on, asking questions like, what should I know about the corporate culture here that might not appear in the official handbook? What are some people who I really should know whose title may not be big but would be very helpful? What are some challenges that the previous you've been a little shy to bring up to the previous leadership that I really should know about if I want to make this an effective work group and a happy work group. Questions like that, and then taking notes, and then going back to your office and reflecting, or taking a walk in the woods and meditating on what you can't cover too many things at once, or maybe you can. You think about what are the initiatives that I really want to stake my claim to, what kind of a time frame, who do I need to keep, who do I need to get rid of. You know, not everybody, you know, usually when you're first hired, it is an opportunity. You don't need to clean a house, but to really take a look at who is really going to be at least a B player, if not an A player, and then crisply try to counsel them out so that you're not facing a lawsuit right away, but trying to counsel them so that to help them realize that there may be a better fit for them elsewhere in or outside your organization. So that's a little brain dump about what the new leader, even if it's a foreman, should be doing. To what extent do you agree and disagree with what I've just said?
I agree with the listening very hard. I agree with the note-taking with a caveat. Depending on what the culture has been like, if you start writing down what people are saying while you're talking to them, it could make people nervous that somehow this is going to be used against them, and less likely to talk. So you have to determine what the culture has been and whether people feel that you're talking to them because you really want to learn or because you really want to see who is the root of the problem and you want to get rid of them. So sometimes it may be best to listen very hard and then go back to your office and do the writing so that you don't make people nervous.
I'd like to take a balanced approach to that. To avoid, I think the note-taking, for most people, they like to be thought that they're taken seriously. To avoid that problem of thinking that you're playing gotcha with them, you explain up front. You say, I like to take notes because I really do take seriously what all of you who I'll be talking with have to say, so that they don't feel like they're being nailed to the cross. Does that make sense?
I would put it a little differently. I would say, I like to take notes because I know I'm going to learn a lot of things from you, and I'm afraid I may forget some of them.
Okay.
That's why I'm taking notes.
All right. I think this is a good time to go to the phones. So, dear listeners, if you either are a leader or an aspiring leader, or maybe you are, you know, you've got a leader who annoy you, if you have a question about leadership or management, not the easy, obvious stuff, the harder the better. Or if you disagree with what we've said, or you want to agree or amplify, any question about leadership, this is a great time to call here at Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Barbara, you've got a not obvious tip on modern leadership for us?
I would not be so fast to try to get rid of anybody, because somebody who may not have been a good person under the old leadership might turn out to be your best person. I totally agree with you that you want to make sure that the people that you are closest with are people that you absolutely can trust implicitly. My other idea is, and I'm sure that it's not brand new, but ideas are a dime a dozen. It's implementing them that's so tricky. So you can have this great vision, but you probably are not the person who's going to be able to make it work. It really takes a whole team, and it's dedicating the people and the resources to make this vision happen. Otherwise, it's going to fall on its face.
I want to agree a little bit, amplify or disagree with some of this. So I'm actually more inclined than you. Most people who are weak employees, I'm not talking about the marginal ones, but the really weak employees, if I'm getting a sense as a new leader and I'm talking to a bunch of people and there's been a number of complaints about person X, and then I go and I talk to person X and I see that they're either not that bright or they really seem demotivated or they're, you know, I don't mind people who criticize, but if it's constant negativity, if I'm getting a sense, I want to take advantage of my honeymoon period and I want to counsel that person out, because that is the axiom, and I've said it ad nauseum on this show. If you know, I've read hundreds of leadership books, I've had hundreds of leader clients in all sectors, and indeed, getting the right people on the bus, like they said in that book, From Good to Great, is so important. So no, I'm not going to do mass firings. That's not who I am. It's not good for corporate culture even. But I will look at the bottom few. If I've got 10 people who are my reports, and there's one or two who clearly are, I will crisply act, I think, net-net. There's no guarantees in life. It's like in the previous show on Philosophy Talk. You know, they're talking about what do we not know? I can't know for sure, but I've got to make probabilistic estimates, and time is money. Especially if we're in a fast-paced field like high-tech or biotech, I've got to make a probabilistic decision. And so if after talking with my stakeholders, I get the sense that there are one or two out of my 10 reports who really probabilistically I'd be better off replacing with somebody else, I am going to try to counsel that person out, those people out, person or persons out. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I'm still going to give them a chance to come over from the dark side and be my friend.
Okay.
And maybe be great producers.
Okay.
Maybe they weren't good because they either had a personal, very strong dislike of what was happening before or a dislike for what was happening before. Doesn't necessarily. I want to make sure that I give them a little time to prove themselves. And also because as soon as I start counseling people out, it's going to make other people very nervous.
Well, and so,
they're not going to particularly understand why I did that.
There's another point that I think is important. I think a measure of nervousness is a good thing. Obviously, if you're a tyrant, but if you do let one or two people go, and then others who may, in fact, very often when you're the new leader and they're replacing you, it's because the people weren't happy with previous leadership. There are a lot of workplaces that are complacent, especially when there's a lot of job security and low turnover. And so it's a good thing to make people a little scared, not terrified, but the people should feel there are rewards, intrinsic rewards, that is, meaningful projects, yes, attaboys, and yes, constructive criticism, and yes, your job is not necessarily secure. So I think it's net-net a plus to insert a little measure of fear, but a rational one by getting rid of the one or two people who are the worst. The rest of the workers saying, you know what, it was not irrational. There's a part of me that's really relieved that they're gone. No, I wouldn't. I think a measure of fear makes some sense. What do you think?
Well, as they say, people have different leadership styles.
Okay.
So we can pleasantly agree to disagree on that one.
Okay. And I want to comment about about execution. Everybody would agree that execution matters. I want to talk about that in a little more detail, but I want to give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about is a leader, has a leader you don't like, has a question about what it takes to be a great leader today, this is not the 50s or 60s, I welcome a call. We welcome a call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You talked about execution. I really do know a lot of leaders who like leading. They like talking. They like ideas. But they really are, they're bored with or don't have the discipline to say, you know what, I've got to really plan this out well, delegate appropriately, model myself by being a hard worker who's doing a lot myself, and then really having reasonable timelines. And this is the really important part, to pivot promptly. Almost all projects do not proceed as planned, any more than a sailor who wants to sail from San Francisco to Hawaii has got to adjust the sails ongoing as the wind and waters and weather changes. I see too many leaders guilty of confirmation bias, commitment bias. They've made a commitment to this plan, and they stay with it too long. Things change. Just like I think about presidential candidates who like to, they're proud of, I haven't changed, I'm exactly the way I was. These are positions are consistent. That's stupid. As Emerson said, a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. Similarly, your plan that you as a leader develop for execution needs to, yes, make sense a priori, up front, but then you need to pivot promptly. As things change, you need to gather input throughout to see how the progress is going, and then once you've developed, and as a leader, you've developed a revised version that seems to have a higher probability of working. Part of your job as a leader, yes, is to inspire. And that means, it doesn't mean, a bombastic speech. It means, okay, we were running into problems with this because of this, this, and this. And I've talked to the two of you, and I actually did some reading outside of our organization. And it seems that this plan has a higher probability, no guarantees, no puffery, has a higher probability of success. What do you guys think? Get some input. And then you say, and let's not forget that this project is really worth doing, because think of how much happier our customers will be. Or even it's something good for society. So reminding them of the big vision. Amid all of the failings in project in a project, it's easy to just get despondent and get buried in the minutiae of that individual project. So the great leader reminds them of the benefits that will accrue if they do try this ongoing revised plan. What do you think of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I think it's very important that everybody kind of gets on board.
Yep. Let me give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a question or a comment about leadership, anything we've said, or your own new idea, or your anecdote, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Hello. It's you. Hi.
This is Brenda.
Hi. Hello.
Calling from San Francisco.
Hi. I didn't catch your name. Would you please say it again?
Brenda.
Oh, hi, Brenda. Okay.
Yeah, the conversation is overwhelming for me, actually. And Barbara, everything you said, I feel I've experienced in different capacities or roles in employment, for example, in the unions, in the military, and finding myself working in administration office in a local university around women, something that I hadn't done, that was actually the first time in my early 30s, and to find how disturbing it is that people spend most of their time sabotaging their coworkers and making life miserable, and actually the company suffers, and everyone for that matter. So this is something I think needs to be discussed, because it creates a lot of sadness, and hours are wasted on petty things. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Well, can you give us an example, either ideally one you're currently facing, so that maybe Barbara and I can offer some assistance, or something in the past that would be particularly vivid?
Okay, for example, Barbara mentioned, or you did for that matter, how you have to choose people around you that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of people out there that want your job.
Yep.
Or just don't like you.
Right.
And I like everyone, and I go out of my way to help everyone, because I know that by doing that, it makes everything flow. And one of the things that I learned from my late husband was getting things done through other people. So if you're willing to give, they'll give, and hopefully won't take too much or expect too much, but you get the gist of what I'm trying
to
say.
But do you have an example of, you spoke very vividly. You said you worked at the unions, you worked in the military, you worked in university, and you talked about women, working with women for the first time, and you were saying that there is an amazing amount of hours wasted on people trying to sabotage. Can you give one example, either a current or past example of that?
Well, working in an office at one of the universities, I was in an office of five women, and we were assistants to the executives. And this is where the money comes into the university. The one that had been in charge, she was the assistant to the, I won't give the name, very high position at the university. She seemed to have control over the computers. I was very new in the computers. This was in the late 90s. So my jobs that I was printing that had deadlines were getting lost. I didn't realize till a couple of weeks later that they were going to her printer. And I spent, if I sat down and added up, the time I wasted trying to figure out what happened, not to mention getting yelled by my boss, it created a lot of havoc. And it was done to other assistants as well.
Are you trying to say that the other person should have simply said, "Hey, your printout came to my computer here, my printer here it is"? Is that your point? But she'd rather sabotage you and have you screw up?
Right, and it was later I found out through another assistant that this happens frequently with new people, because the assistant that I replaced, there was a turnover. She just, they just couldn't put up with the office politics. And I prefer not to work in that environment. It's not healthy. It's not conducive to a healthy lifestyle. And I find it quite disturbing that it's a university that allows people to operate in this way.
Yeah, it's the hypocrisy of universities knows no bounds. You know, they talk about treating workers fairly, and then they hire as many faculty as they can, part-time temp with no benefits, even though these are PhDs. They talk about ethics and marketing, and yet if you really look at the way colleges market, they so overinflate the employment prospects, you know, subtly. They can't overtly lie, but so subtly imply that you'll get a job in your art major, your journalism major, your environmental studies major, whatever. It's business about scholarships. They imply that if you donate money to them, that the scholarships will enable kids to go to college who otherwise wouldn't go, which is totally not true. Usually ends up replacing just the money that would have come out of the college's coffers with your money.
Absolutely.
I know.
Everything you just said is on the mark.
Universities are America's most overrated. I've spent much of my life writing articles and books, and I developed a troll. Mm-hmm. I was actually the blogger for the Chronicle of Higher Education and talking about this.
Oh.
And there was some faculty member who was offended by all this, and for the last 12 years has been trolling me, writing unbelievable lies, personal attacks, on almost everything I write when I write about higher education. Higher ed is absolutely, and it gets a free pass because the media loves them because the higher ed is liberal, so the media loves to give them a free pass.
Right.
And I'm liberal on a lot of things too, but, you know, we will bash Firestone because they have 4 bad tires, but universities, which year in and year out take millions of kids and billions of dollars and really provide remarkably poor value both on the research end and teaching end, and they're basically, we give them a pass. It's one of society's great outrages in my view.
They're very highly overrated. Yeah. I agree. Thank you.
Anyway, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. I love your show. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Barbie, I've been talking a lot. Barbie, you have anything you want to say?
Well, the one thing that I would add that people are going to get really upset about, the caller talked about the 5 women in the office. I have a very long and extensive working life, and the only time I was ever deliberately sabotaged was by a woman and saved by men. And so I know there's a lot of male bashing that goes on today, and people sometimes talk as though women are wonderful and men are awful. And in my personal experience, it was the woman who really very deliberately sabotaged.
Those are anecdotes, but indeed there have been a number of books written about how women do sabotage other women in the workplace all the time.
Well, that's
yeah, I'm agreeing.
True.
I'm just saying
but
I'm building.
You can't say
yeah.
that. I can say
yeah,
that
very true.
Because it's my life experience.
Joanne Marr, who is our engineer here, wrote a note I'd like to read to you. We were talking about, you know, how long do you stay with, if you're a new leader, how long mm-hmm. do you stay with an employee who you sense is bad? And she writes, a lot of times a problem employee is simply not capable of being very productive and not likely to leave. I've heard of something called the 80-20 rule. Surround that problem employee with other more capable, competent employees who are team players. They can take over key functions that he or she monopolizes and thus minimize his or her deleterious impact on the work environment. That's the best that can be done if this problem employee can't be terminated. Joanne Marr, as usual, thank you for your good comment.
Yeah, good point. Excellent.
Excellent, right. So let me give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a leadership issue, either a story or a question, if you are a leader, I have had the privilege of being, I have been the career and personal coach to literally hundreds of top leaders, both at the corporate level, in the nonprofit and government. And Barbara is a really renowned, I'm not going to repeat the things I introduced. I won't. But she's a renowned leader without any question. The phone number here for free advice, which is not such a bad price. The phone number here, work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. Thanks for your patience. What's on your mind?
Good morning.
Hi.
This is David.
Hi, David.
From San Francisco. And just a few observations about leadership and dealing with employees.
Great.
I found that as a leader, by establishing a project with goals and milestones, so that the leader also has a vested interest in it, really helps along with the project, and goes also to what you said earlier about having to make changes. If you sit down with an employee, iron out a project over a month or a six-month period, and you establish milestones over this time frame, then sitting down with them once or so a week or once every couple of weeks to go over where you are gives a sense of ownership not only to the employee but also to the leader. And as far as, you know, instilling, using fear as a motivational tool, I've never found that to work. It certainly didn't work with me. Doing this approach also can ferret out employees who aren't performing, and then it provides kind of a record so that you can have something. If you do need to terminate, you have a basis for it. That's the way I've spent my supervisory time.
I was a little confused. On the one hand, you said that fear doesn't work at all, and I remember I was saying that only a small measure of it can be helpful, especially in a complacent workforce. But
well,
then you
I
said it was helpful to you.
It depends on the individual.
Right.
People would magnify and possibly exaggerate fear. It depends on their own personality, I think.
Okay.
Having some understanding of some of the consequences of non-performance or non-production, I suppose that would be one instance where a modicum of at least identifying the consequences rather than the fear. I mean, fear is a kind of a pejorative word when used in an employment setting, so it could also backfire a little bit.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for the call. But Barbara, is there anything you wanted to say here?
Yes, I totally agree with the caller. And I think one of the things we haven't talked about so much is delegate.
Mm-hmm.
And I only bring that up because what he said about setting goals and timelines and having meetings and seeing where people are is terribly important. And when I said that having ideas is nice, but the implementation is the key, that's the implementation I'm talking about. And that's something I'm not good at. And I know I'm not good at that. But I am blessed to have been working with somebody for the last 30 years who is fabulous at that.
Right.
And so I can bring in the idea, and once we decide that this is an initiative we want to move, he will take over that part completely and reassign people to this priority initiative and make sure that the meetings take place on a regular basis and that we are writing down where we are. And all of the things that David just said do happen, but if you're not the person who has that particular skill and that follow-through, have somebody else take that on, and you can still be the inspiration and the heart that they follow and the communicator, but you have somebody else who's got the scaffolding that's going to keep the building being standing up straight.
Yeah. The larger issue that's an example of is adapting the job to your strengths.
Yes.
While it's true
sitting down and talking with people, though, it stimulates ideas and things that either one may not have thought about over time. And it also gives no surprises when it comes time for performance evaluation. Everyone
right.
knows where they kind of stand.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. I want to talk a little more about that adapting. I mean, all leaders need to be good at hiring, they need to be good at planning, they need to be good at managing people, they need to be good at managing projects and aspiring. But while most leaders need to be a combination of that, leaders and even managers have some power to adjust their job description, delegating their weak areas, like you were saying. So, dear people,
I learned that from you.
Right. Okay. Thank you. So, dear listeners, you need to ask yourself, what really are your preferred activities in your job? I'm going to take a moment. Think about that a moment. What are your real, what would the goddess say are your real strengths? What would the goddess say are your weaknesses? You've got them. We all have them. And then if you're not sure, is it time to solicit some anonymous feedback from colleagues and supervisees? There's a great new website that does that called 15-5, the number 15 and then the word spelled out 5, F-I-V-E, where you can get anonymous feedback. So, and then adapt the job, change your job description to the extent you can to reflect your preferences and your strengths and your weaknesses. phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. If you have a work-related problem of any sort, but especially related to management or leadership, stories, I love stories too, practical, real anecdotes. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. What's on my mind is that I got this job last year. I was hired late in the season. It was a summer job as a camp director, and the staff that I had, I didn't hire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was kind of thrown into the job kind of last minute, and so I didn't know the job, and these people, A, I didn't hire, and B, had been there for several years, knew the job.
Right.
So it was sort of like, you know, I came in, I felt like I was polite and, you know, very professional, that kind of stuff. But what happened was the dynamic began to grow that this one more, strong personality type kind of developed and brought in the rest of the staff to kind of look to her,
mm-hmm.
even though she was under me. And it just created kind of like a mob-like scenario where I felt like they were sort of mobbed up and I was, you know, sort of the person on the outs. And so, you know, I had to deal with it all summer and it was uncomfortable and I tried to raise it. We tried to talk about it. We tried to this, that, the other thing. Anyway, so fast forward, they've now offered me the job again this year. And mm-hmm. even though I was sort of like iffy from last year's situation, I took it and I'm now like sort of wondering like how can I best now get back in there stronger and, you know, kind of avoid, you know, this mob-like scenario to develop again.
Barbara, you want to take this? You want me to?
No, I'll let you start.
Okay. So there we go again. Now, you're absolutely right, and especially in nonprofit and government environments and in long-standing organizations. It is, you are inheriting people who have been there a long time and who have developed their little culture and whatever. That emphasizes the point of upfront trying to see where there are these pockets of danger. Right now, probably, there's usually one ringleader mm-hmm. among them. And it seems to me that you have to figure, since if she's a he or she is going to be there, you've got to neutralize your enemy. It was Machiavelli who said, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. It really seems to me that it is time for you to take her out to lunch or do something special, take a hike with her or whatever. And see if she probably will never be your best friend, but use, and this is a dirty word, but it's used in a legitimate, justifiable way. Manipulate her into caring and liking you. Understand her hot buttons. What does she really give a crap about? Is it her job? Is it status? Is it money? Is it her aging? Is it her children? Is it the Golden State Warriors? Whoever it is, but you need to understand what motivates her. And get her so that she feels you care about her, understand her, and I was talking about the personal, but the professional too. What are your goals for the job this year? You don't need to be confrontive. Tell me, you know, you've been here a long time. What would you hope that will occur in the workplace this summer? How about for yourself, you know, professionally? How can I be of support to you? Do all those, some combination of all that stuff is the stuff that neutralizes your enemies. But please be honest with me. Is this beside the point, or is any of this buffet of thing options that I've given you have any validity in this particular situation?
Yeah, definitely. I think just saying, you know, what are your goals for the summer professionally and personally, and how can I be a support to you is great. I think that could get us in a good conversation, talking about things, you know, in the beginning, just to set a precedence.
Right. Barbara, what would you like to add, if anything?
That I would start by just trying to get to know her before I would ask her what her goals are, because that may feel confrontational to her. Why are you
mm-hmm.
asking me what my goals are? You're the boss. Oh, she's probably not going to like my goals. So I would mm-hmm. I would just try to listen to her. One of my favorite statements from the first time manager is, ever notice that the more you allow the other person to talk, the higher you'll be rated as a brilliant conversationalist?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it might
find
be
just show an interest in her as a person.
Like a phrase, you know, I mean, I'm curious. This is how I might start such a conversation. I agree with Barbara completely, by the way, here. How I might start such a conversation is, let's say her name is Mary. Mary, you know, we've spent a year last summer together. I really don't know very much about you. Is there anything you want to tell me about yourself? Something really broad and open-ended.
I'd like to get to know you better.
Yeah. Either way. Okay. Mm-hmm. I thank you very much for the call, and I hope that helps. And
tell
me one thing about your summer camp. What makes it good? I never went to sleepaway camp, and I always regretted it. My sister went, and I never got to go. Tell me one thing that makes that camp cool.
I think it's because they get out to a lot of different parks in the area, and they get to know their parks, and they realize all the great resources they have out there for free.
Cool. Thank you very much for the call.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I want to offer another one of these, what I think are not necessarily obvious tips in leadership.
Okay.
It's a word you get annoyed when I use it so much, but I love the word.
I know. You're going to say crisp.
I am.
I'm going to cut that out of your vocabulary and bury it in the word.
You know what? My clients love when I use the word crisp. They like that word. It's a real good soundbite for a lot of really important things in leadership. Of course, it's useful not just when you're trying to terminate a weak employee. When you're obtaining group input, like at a meeting, as soon as you feel the time would be spent better on something else, make that decision. Make the decision you need to say. You say, okay, we've discussed this enough. We're going to do it this way for this reason and this reason and this reason, and acknowledge other people's input. Just like on this radio show, I am constantly asking myself, would the next few minutes of our time be better spent offering a tip, going to the phones, or changing topics? It is having that little voice in your ear. That's part of what crispness is like. Also, the good leader does not reflexively adhere to today's egalitarian ethos, in which buy-in, input, consensus, they're all extolled, much more than bold individual decision-making. The really wise leader evaluates on a case-by-case basis, is it more time effective at this moment to unilaterally decide, or to, yes, form a task force, form a committee, etc., especially in fast-moving fields like high-tech and biotech. I have learned from having many clients who are leaders, businesses that unnecessarily dither and spend too much time on process, what I metaphorically call color coding, often go out of business because they're so busy dithering. There, in the meantime, the other companies are quickly pivoting and moving forward. What are you? So you really still hate my crispness recommendation?
I hate the word. I don't like any word that gets overused all the time.
All right. So, well,
fast will do.
Fast will do. All right. Fast sounds like it's rushing. Crisp sounds better. Anyway, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. What do you do when you have an ineffective mayor in the city of Oakland and the bureaucracy is totally unresponsive to the needs of the residents? For example, 2 weeks ago, a stolen car was parked in the most affluent part of Oakland. The residents informed the police department, the fire department, and the mayor's office, and to date they have not responded.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, that's
what
not
can you do in this type of situation when you pay almost close to $20,000 in property tax?
Yeah. So let me, first of all, I'm not a big fan of big government at all, but I want to say, there are so many, the city of Oakland especially, is beset by so many problems that, and despite the huge budget the government has, the stolen car, frankly, especially in a rich neighborhood, because really the care is about the poor, and is in Oakland, it is not about the rich. You know, they're going to say, you know what, that's just something, and a good leader has got to triage. A good leader has got to say, I only have 60 hours a week that I'm going to work without giving myself a heart attack. So am I going to spend my time on this? Or am I going to sometimes have to ignore things that are worthy? So I'm not going to bash that particular decision, even though I decry it.
But, you know, Marty, the same kind of incompetence is what contributed to the perishing of 36 young people last year due to fire.
That's a different story.
And
you know what?
Lack of leadership.
All right, I'm going to thank you for the call, and I'm going to say there is a perfect example. The wise leader you can't anticipate every event. So there was this old warehouse somewhere on the 29th and East 14th or whatever it is, and yes, there were things that happened. But rather than play 2020, the wise leader, who is overwhelmed with all the problems in Oakland, would probably ignore or simply send a one-line note to the police about deal with this. But with regard to the big fire, I would have a meeting with my one meeting. This is what CRISP is. One meeting with the key stakeholders, my fire chief, my legal counsel, whatever the hell it is. And I would say, okay, what is the big takeaway? We don't want to overreact. It was like after there was the shoe bomber, all of a sudden everybody has to take their shoes off at the airport. That's overreaction. The CRISP leader, sorry, Barb, would say, okay, we've had a horrible disaster here. Let's have a CRISP meeting and come away with one practical, non-overreacting takeaway, and let's implement right away. And you, Mr. Fire Chief, or you, Mr. Chief Counsel, or you, Ms. Director of whatever, is in charge. That's CRISP leadership. Does that make sense? Are you there, Barb?
No, you're asking me?
Yeah, does that make sense?
I think if citizens are feeling that you're not being responsive, then you better get your team together and you better sit down and figure out how you're going to be responsible.
If it's broadly true.
If my car is stolen, I'm not interested in the fact that you're overwhelmed and you have so many other more important things to do. I want a response, and I want to talk to my team about how we're going to make that happen.
But the wise leader realizes it is a zero-sum game. If I'm spending too much time on that stolen car in the rich neighborhood, it means I don't have time to do what may have a greater make a greater difference. One of the most important principles of leadership, in fact, of effectiveness in life, is what I call utilitarianism. It is a socialist principle, but I believe in it. What is going to do the most good for the most people? That is philosopher Peter Singer's core principle, and I agree with that. What is going to do the most good for the most people? Because we don't have unlimited resources and don't have unlimited time. Barbara Nemco doesn't have unlimited time on this earth. Martin Nemco doesn't have unlimited time on this earth. It is what can we make the biggest difference as quickly as possible. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind? Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. I had a comment regarding an earlier conversation where I think Barbara had said, if when you're at camp, tell the person that you want to get to know them.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't think that's really an effective way to say that. I don't think you should say anything like that. I think you should just show a natural interest in what the person has to say. I very much agree with the conversationalist letting the other person talk, but to say I want to get to know you, that to me that feels forceful, it feels artificial. Why don't you just make a sincere effort to connect with that person?
I need to defend Barbara there. I think you're nitpicking here. I think it's a subtle thing. Yeah, I agree it isn't the best. I think it's a little artificial, I agree. But that's so, it's like 0.1% of the message. The message was to try to build a relationship. So whether she prefaced it with I'd like to get to know you better or not, is fairly trivial. So I'm going to thank you for the call. Barbara, are you glad that I defended you on this one?
Well, thank you. I think we each have different styles. And so I might say that because that makes me feel comfortable, and he might say it a different way, and that's all fine.
Yep.
The whole point is we're going to sit down and try and get to know the person.
Yep. Let me. I'm going to offer. Not going to take any more calls. We've only got a few minutes left. I want to offer a tip and get your reaction to it. It is many leaders try to motivate by the use of rewards and punishment, paying a lot more money to hire when an employee first comes in, offering a lot of salary increases, plum assignments. You get to go on this training. You get this cushy assignment. You get to work in Hawaii or whatever. But generally, those do not much motivate, especially existing employees. Yes, I think foolishly, job seekers are often seduced by an extra few $1,000 in salary, even though after taxes you lose half of it, when that really ends up not being critical in terms of your lifestyle or the contribution. But I really think that that the external rewards, whether it be cash or even praise, if you're praising, especially if you praise often, it begins to lose its impact, it loses its power. And criticism, too. You give it too often, and yes, you're creating a negative environment, people are going to be turned off. Or you give too little, yes, they're not going to get enough feedback. But generally, the really wise leader doesn't rely on those externals to motivate, but the intrinsic things, like that this is really a project that's worth doing. And this is a project that's using your best skills. This is a project that's really going to make a difference in the lives of customers or society. That builds an intrinsic motive. And also, you motivate by them seeing that you're a worthy leader, that you are walking your talk, that you're working hard, you're working smart, you're respectful, but can be crisp. You will say no when you need to say no, say yes where you can, no where you must. It seems to me those things are more likely to build intrinsic motivation than all the higher pay scales, the cash rewards, the carrots we're dangling, all the excessive praise, avoiding criticism. What do you think, Barbara?
Oh, everything is subtle and everything depends. I think that if you're asking people to build new skill sets and do things that are really challenging for them, then it's a fine thing to give, particularly people who may not be highly paid. It's a tough world today. And if you have a job that is not highly paid and people are asking you to really go the extra mile and take on these new challenges, I don't think it's bad to give some kind of a monetary reward. I know you and I disagree on that, but I think it's fine.
I mean, a little, it's fine. And I'm more of a fan of little thank you notes that they've, handwritten thank you notes that they'll put on the shoulder of their family and put on the refrigerator.
Oh, absolutely. I use those all the time. And sometimes it's funny because I see them hanging in people's offices. So I do know that they are meaningful, but nothing beats the ability to be able to take your kids away for a weekend to do something because you got a little bonus for your extra hard work.
Let's take this specific example. I mean, this is I'm not going to fight you to the mat here on this. But
okay.
If I am asking a worker to learn this new piece of software, which is what kind of thing you were implying or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I'm much more likely. And let's say it's 10 people or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm more likely to have a meeting and saying, I know change is hard and technology is scary and yucky very often, even though it helps us. So I brought in this amazing. I really took my time to find an amazing trainer who's going to work with you one, who's going to have one workshop, but then work with you one-on-one. And here are the benefits that this is going to create for you as well as for the customer. Please, if you're stuck or have a problem, I've paid the consultant a little extra so that she's available or he is available on the phone or by email to you. I think that's going to do more than giving him a $25 gift certificate to Starbucks.
It's not a zero-sum game. I think you do both of those things. I think you facilitate the learning by providing this, but they're killing themselves and they don't want to hear that you paid a little extra to bring in this other person who they don't know who's going to make more money while they're struggling so much. So I think you can do both.
I think if you do that once, then they're going to expect it all the time. How come you gave me a Starbucks card for this one, but now you're asking me to do something else and now you're not giving me anything?
I've never heard anybody say that.
All right.
Nobody has ever said that to us.
All right. We've got no time left, so I'm simply going to thank you, Barbara Nemco, for, people have said they the one thing they like about the show is that we do model a good marriage. We disagreed a lot today on a topic that's very dear to your heart, but I think we did it in a way that we will get off this phone and our marriage will be intact. We will not have a fight afterwards.
Sure.
And I urge, respectful disagreement is an important part of leadership, working, and, of course, in a relationship. And so, Barbara Nemco, thank you very much for your wonderfully respectful and intelligent comments and disagreements. That is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, as always, and most of all, you. Without you, there is no show. Thank you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers and good options in our gig economy. Good career options, plus under-the-radar careers for creative types. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.